What is it like to dream? How similar is it to waking experience? What are dreams, ontologically? Some philosophers have argued that the nature of a dream is quite different from how we ordinarily think about it. And this goes beyond the rejection of the psychoanalytic idea that dreams are windows into the subconscious in need of interpretation, or the common religious idea that dreams can contain messages or information given by an outside source. So I want to focus on the intersection of dreaming and philosophy of mind. Philosophers like Norman Malcolm and Daniel Dennett have argued that dreams are not even experiences, although for quite different reasons. Ordinarily, we think that when you're asleep and dreaming, you can have thoughts, experiences, emotions, memories, and so on. Many people seem to think that dreams are akin to hallucinations, but they still involve phenomenal states. There's something that it's like to have a dream for the subject. So Dan Dennett challenged this view with what's called the cassette theory. Basically, our recall of dream experiences is deeply unreliable, not just when it comes to recalling what exactly happened or the order in which things happened. He thinks we shouldn't accept the received view that dreams are conscious experiences that occur during sleep. So Dennett's idea is that we have two competing hypotheses here that are empirically equivalent. That it is like something for us when we dream, and that it's only like something to remember dreaming after we wake up. This is from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy entry on the philosophy of dreaming, which exists. Quote, Dennett's cassette theory says dreams are the product of instantaneous memory insertion at the moment of the awakening, as if a cassette with pre-scripted dreams had been inserted into memory, ready for replay. Dennett claims that the cassette theory, and the view that dreams are experiences, can deal equally well with empirical evidence, for instance on the relationship between dreaming and REM sleep. The cassette theory is preferable because it's more parsimonious, positing only an unconscious dream composition process rather than an additional conscious presentation process in sleep. End quote. According to Dennett, the received view is that dreams are experiences that occur during sleep. But he's wary of taking reports of dream experiences at face value. He argues that what we recall as a dream may be a confabulatory narrative unconsciously constructed to make sense of fragmented neural activity. Accepting that dreams are experiences means accepting that the brain goes to the trouble of presenting this fragmented neural activity during sleep, seemingly for no reason. It's also unnecessarily complex, since one unconscious process of narrative construction and memory insertion could do the job, without the additional process of dream presentation that occurs while it's all happening. So although it seems like dreams are experiences that occur during sleep, our recollection and report of dreams doesn't rule out the cassette theory. And actually, there's some reason to think the cassette theory is true. Have you ever had a dream that coincided with external events like the sound of an alarm clock, or some other noise? The dream feels like it's going on for a long time, sometimes with an elaborate storyline, but upon waking, we find out that part of the dream was being influenced by stimuli that have only been present for a few seconds. I've always assumed that my sense of time is warped during sleep, but the cassette theorists take these sorts of events as evidence for their theory. Alfred Marey described a long and complex dream about the French Revolution that culminated in his execution at the guillotine, at which point he suddenly awoke to find that the headboard had fallen on his neck. Because the dream seemed to systematically build up to this dramatic conclusion, which in turn coincided with a sudden external event, Marey suggested that such cases were best explained as instantaneous memory insertions experienced at the moment of awakening. Marey was writing in 1861. Later in 1916, J.C. Gregory described dreams as, quote, psychical explosions which occur at the moment of awakening. So Dennett wasn't the first to argue that dreams are spontaneous memory insertions. You might doubt that our memories could be so unreliable and so misleading, but you'd be wrong. Researchers have implanted false memories in subjects under many conditions, and we have an abundance of evidence that our memories can be wildly inaccurate. It's just not too much of a stretch to say that we can form memories of events that didn't really happen. So the intuitive view of dreams as conscious experiences and the cassette theory are arguably empirically equivalent, but the cassette theory seems to have an edge since it can better explain dreams that incorporate external stimuli. For example, my alarm has only been going off for a few seconds, but in my dream, the sound of the alarm has influenced or been incorporated into the dream narrative for what feels like a lot longer than a few seconds. So that's one thing it has going for it. One major problem for the cassette theory is lucid dreaming. In fact, neuroscientists who study sleep have gathered quite a bit of evidence that should push us away from the cassette theory. Lucid dreaming is the phenomenon of becoming aware that you're dreaming. Oftentimes, people wake up upon realizing that they're dreaming, but some don't, and they can exhibit control and influence over what happens in their dreams. I remember hearing Josh Rasmussen talk about lucid dreaming and flying in his dream, and I thought, man, that sounds really fun. I want to do that. If I ever have a lucid dream, I'm going to try to fly. And about 2 weeks later, I became aware that I was dreaming, and I tried to fly. It actually worked. So first, I levitated about 20 or 30 feet straight off the ground, and then I flew through the air. It was incredibly fun. I highly recommend it. I've heard there are techniques for inducing lucid dreams that involve setting an intention ahead of time about what you're going to do in the dream, and I think I might have accidentally done that. But the point is, if I'm aware that I'm dreaming in that very moment, then how could it be a mere memory any more than this right now could be a memory? I mean, it's happening now. But the cassette theorist remains unimpressed. They would say that the lucid aspect of the dream is simply another part of the memory that you have upon waking. But this evinces a deeper skepticism than they originally signed up for. Skepticism about memory is one thing, but skepticism about conscious experience in the present moment is quite another. And for the lucid dreamer, they are aware, exerting control, and having conscious experiences in their present moment. So that's not likely to dissuade the cassette theorist, since they can't interrogate you while you're having the lucid dream. Except, sleep researchers managed to do exactly that. Lucid dreamers supposedly know that they're dreaming, so researchers asked them to move their eyes in certain patterns that they could identify while they were dreaming, and lucid dreamers were able to signal to the sleep researchers that they were lucid, and upon waking, they remembered not only their dreams, but they remembered signaling their lucidity with their agreed-upon eye movement signals. Quote, lucid dreamers can use specific prearranged patterns of eye movements, for example, right-left-right-left, to signal in real time that they are now lucid and engaging in dream experiments. These signals are clearly identifiable on the EOG and suggest a correspondence between dream eye movements and real eye movements. Retrospective reports confirm that the dreamer really was lucid and signaled lucidity. End quote. So, in order to discount this evidence, skeptics about dream experience would need to say that lucid dreaming and non-lucid dreaming are completely different neurological processes, and that this evidence only supports the idea that lucid dreams involve experiences. But that seems unmotivated and unparsimonious. Parsimony was supposedly a major reason we're supposed to like the cassette theory in the first place, since philosophers like Dennett were uncomfortable with multiplying brain processes when one could do the job. He thought the received view was extravagant and possibly in tension with his general view about what consciousness is and how it works. But now, in light of the scientific evidence, cassette theorists would have to take on all the costs of accepting that some dreamers do have conscious experiences when they dream, but still maintain that the cassette theory applies to ordinary dreams. It's the worst possible theory. The convergence of dream reports and behavioral observations of eye movements during sleep is best explained by the idea that dreams involve conscious experiences. The common sense view that dreams are conscious experiences that occur during sleep makes the most sense. It's not undermined by empirical findings, but rather supported by them. Does everyone dream? So we all know people who don't report dreaming very often. I dream pretty much every night, but my wife says she almost never has dreams. And here, the common sense view seems to be that there really is such a thing as sound, dreamless sleep. And of course, it's typically believed that there's nothing, truly nothing, while under general anesthesia, which apparently, I've never gone under myself, seems different to subjects than even the deepest sleep. It's like one moment you're here, and the very next moment, the surgery's over and you're back, I'm told. This seems to suggest that even dreamless sleep involves phenomenal consciousness in some faded form. Maybe there's still a sense of time, or some stripped-down presence that is just barely like something. If not, then I'm not sure how to explain the stark phenomenological contrast with general anesthesia. Those who have been under insist that it's very different from even the deepest dreamless sleep. So let's talk about dreamless sleep first. Just as it's possible that dreams are not consciously experienced during sleep, but only consciously remembered upon waking, so it is possible that we dream every night, but simply don't remember it. There's no problem with forgetting past experiences, since we all forget most of our past experiences, almost all of them, in fact, and our dream memories are particularly fleeting. Sometimes I forget my dreams only a minute or two after waking. What was so vivid minutes earlier disappears without a trace, and I actually can't bring it back. I can remember waking up and thinking, huh, what a crazy dream, only to be utterly unable to recall it after I get out of bed. So I'd say we have a good precedent when it comes to forgetting dreams. Maybe people who don't dream simply don't remember. It's entirely possible that during sleep, the presence of phenomenal consciousness persists, while higher-level mnemonic features of consciousness fade. Perhaps memories are never formed in the first place. It's easy to conceptually separate experience and memory, and it's clear that other features of our minds come online and go offline during sleep. Why would memory be exempt? We could extend the phenomenon of forgetting, or never forming a memory of, dream experiences, and say that this isn't just happening some nights, like we know it does. It's happening every night. I'm going to read from Dale Allison's book, Encountering Mystery. Quote, "Some are better at recalling their dreams than others. A friend once told me that, with a single exception, he has never, over the course of a lifetime, remembered any of his dreams. By contrast, it is a rare morning when I fail to recollect a dream or some part of it. Although the explanation for such disparity is unknown to me, the fact is unsurprising. Everything human spans a spectrum. Some are very tall, some very short, and the rest fill up the spaces in between. Some learn to speak exceptionally early, some learn to speak exceptionally late, and the rest of us fill up the spaces in between. And some remember their dreams nearly always, others hardly ever, and the rest fill up the spaces in between." So having a dream and remembering a dream are distinct events. The unreliability of our dream memory leaves open the possibility that we are dreaming all night and simply don't remember it. To reject this possibility would require us to place an unjustifiable degree of trust in the memory of dreams. Put simply, if you don't remember something happening in your sleep, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. The crucial components have already been accepted by anyone who's appreciated the tenuous bridge between our waking and sleeping minds. Of course, some are adamant that they don't experience anything during sleep. They are confident that their mind is annihilated every night. Their evidence is that they don't remember it. But if you can't recall an experience, that doesn't mean it didn't happen, especially if the experience was totally unremarkable. And since dream memory is so tenuous to begin with, I'm not sure how much weight I give to their one and only line of evidence, that is, that they don't remember dreaming. It remains a possibility that a dim glow of consciousness persists as long as I'm alive. To be clear, I don't have any evidence to positively think this is the case. I just think it's a possibility, one that can't be easily discarded given our background knowledge about the fleeting and fickle nature of the memory of dreams. I often forget my dreams mere moments after waking. What if this had happened a moment before I fully woke up? Then I might claim to never dream. One disagreement over the ontology of dreams is whether they should count as hallucinations, or whether they're closer to imaginative experiences or illusions. Dream experiences often have the same phenomenal character as ordinary waking perception. We see objects and other people. We feel sensations, and so on. Yet, no object is actually being perceived, right? If I see a tree in my dream, there's not actually a mind-independent object that I'm perceiving, so it seems like it should count as a hallucination. There's no tree that's actually there. My mental image of a tree exists without any external object of perception, which I don't have any issue with as an indirect realist. Even in ordinary waking conditions, I think it's probably more accurate to say that I'm in touch with my mental representation of a tree, not the tree itself. In dreams, I just have the mental image without the external object. It is interesting, though, how vivid these images are. In this waking moment, I can't create a mental image of a tree that's as concrete and robust as the trees in my dreams. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. So dreams might ordinarily be hallucinations or imaginative experiences or illusions, I'm not sure, but some people report occasionally having an unusually vivid dream, one that is actually indistinguishable from waking perception. Further, they sometimes receive interesting information in their dreams, and it's not always clear how they could be in possession of that information. This is fairly commonplace in religious traditions, prophetic dreams, precognitive dreams, dreams that involve those who have recently died, and so on. But many of these dreams that appear to involve meaningful premonitions don't involve very specific information, and probably they're just coincidences. This is what Ben Springett wrote for the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy entry on the philosophy of dreaming. Quote, "It's worth noting a related issue about dreams which are alleged to have a more prophetic nature. It seems from the subjective point of view that if one was to have had a dream about a plane crash the night before, or morning of, September 11th, 2001, this would have been a premonitory dream, or one might dream of a relative or celebrity dying and wake to find this actually happens in real life. The probability of the occurrence of a dream being loosely or even exactly about an unforeseen future event is increased when one has a whole lifetime of dreams, a lifetime to generate one or two coincidences. The dreams which are not premonitory are underreported, and the apparently prophetic dreams are overreported. The probability of having a dream with content vaguely similar to the future is increased by the fact that a single individual has many dreams over a lifetime. Big events are witnessed and acknowledged by large numbers of people, which increases the probability that someone will have a dream with similar content. No doubt when the Twin Towers were attacked, some people just so happened to have dreams about plane crashes, and a few might have even had dreams more or less related to planes crashing into towers, or even the Twin Towers. Billions of dreams would have been generated the night prior, as they are every night around the world, and so some would have invariably hit the mark." End quote. Prophetic dreams have been part of religious traditions for millennia, and according to a 2014 paper published in the International Journal of Dream Research, surveys show that around one quarter of the population believes in the ability to foretell the future, and about one third report precognitive experiences. The skeptical explanation offered by Springett a moment ago works, I think, for the vast majority of these unusual dreams, perhaps all of them. I think there are two factors that would cast doubt on the skeptical explanation: frequency and specificity. You'd expect a fair coin to sometimes come up heads, sometimes tails. But if it reliably comes up heads over and over again, you are probably not flipping a fair coin. Likewise, if a hypothetical person were having precognitive dreams every single night, then the skeptical hypothesis just isn't plausible. Coincidence is a great explanation if we're talking about one or two over the course of a lifetime, if we have billions of dreamers conjuring up wild images night after night. But if the coin keeps coming up heads, that sort of frequency suggests that we need another explanation. I don't know if there is such a person, I'm just outlining what would be required to overturn the default hypothesis. The second factor is specificity. A plane crash is not terribly specific, but if a dream involves specific details, that's a different story. If someone dreamed on September 10th that four planes would be hijacked, one of them would hit the Pentagon, two would hit the Twin Towers, and one of them would go down in a field in Pennsylvania, That is specific enough that writing it off as a coincidence seems like way too much of a stretch. Again, I'm not saying this has ever happened. I'm just saying what would be needed to go beyond the default skeptical hypothesis. When it comes to dreams in which interesting and specific information is revealed, I'm curious about what it would mean if this were true. There's a place for tracking down supposed cases of precognitive dreams and evaluating them, but I'm also curious how that would work if it is true. In general, it is much easier to establish that something is happening than it is to figure out how it's happening. In a sense, we've always known about gravity, but our theories of how gravity works were not very good until the last few centuries after the scientific revolution. Now, even if we entertain the hypothesis that dreams are at least occasionally not hallucinations or something related, I'm not sure by what mechanism, for lack of a better term, this information would be revealed. It raises questions about the predetermination of the future, among other things. Of course, there's this word God that can be invoked to explain absolutely anything. Trivially, anything can be explained by an omnipotent being desired it to be so. But beyond God did it, is there any way to explain these kinds of dreams that makes any sense? One of the only answers I've heard comes in the form of etherism, the theory of consciousness that we discussed in a previous episode. So there are other kinds of dreams in which interesting information is passed on. And let's listen to one of these stories from a woman who experienced it firsthand, so you have a better idea of what we're talking about. This is from episode 5 of a podcast called Otherworld, titled The Messenger. Apparently, this sort of thing happens to this woman a lot.
Okay, my name is Annie Suzuki, and I think these things kind of started. The first one actually started with Shane's dad's friend, okay, my brother Joe's friend. And I had gone to Branson to go visit them, and I had heard that he had passed away. And that night I had gone to bed, and I had known him my whole life. I had knew he and his brother and everything my whole life. And I fell asleep, kind of asleep. I can't explain it. It's a different thing. There was a big white light that came, and he's standing there with his brother, who had passed away also, and he had his arm around him. And he looked at me and he said, you know, I'm doing okay. And he said, you need to tell Joe that there is something here. And I looked at him and he said, you need to tell Joe that there's something here. And he also said, you need to tell your sister-in-law, who was also, he was good friends with, that everything's okay, I'm okay. And that I love her, everything's fine. And at that point I woke up and the light was really bright and I thought, wow, that's really strange. So I called Joe up. I know that Joe's a real skeptic about everything. I called Joe up and I said, Joe, I had a dream about Michael last night, but he said to tell you that there is something there. And he goes, what? And I said, there is something there. And he said, when he and I were young with their other friend, the three of them made a pact that whoever went first would let the other two know that there was something there. And those were the exact words that they used.
Now, interesting as that is, I don't think it's quite enough to overturn a naturalistic worldview or anything. Maybe she somehow heard the story before and just forgot about hearing it. But if the story was public knowledge, I don't know if it would have freaked out the man's friend as much as it did. So it's ambiguous. You know, it's like an episode of The X-Files. You're free to interpret it either way. When the woman on the Otherworld podcast explained how she received her information, she claimed that the man who died appeared to her in her dreams. Well, again, it's easier to establish that something happens than it is to explain how it happens. But how would that happen? Where did he go? I know how to communicate with you, but how did he communicate with her? I'm not trying to put an undue burden on those who take these dreams seriously, but I am curious about how it even could work. Again, maybe etherism leaves the door open for this, but I don't know. In addition to precognitive dreams, there are also unusual cases of subjects having the same dream while in the same location. And this happened to me once. In Yosemite National Park, my brother and I both had the same exact dream, which, for what it's worth, had nothing to do with hiking or the outdoors. It was just a very old man with pale blue eyes, flies buzzing around him, staring intently at me, repeating the same sentence over and over. It was creepy. Actually, it scared the hell out of me and I woke up. I went back to sleep, got up a couple hours later, and started on the trail with my brother. He then spontaneously said, "Oh, I had this weird dream last night," and described exactly what had happened to me. So I was confused and asked if he was messing with me. He's not the type to pull pranks like that, but I just couldn't compute what he was telling me. And he didn't know what I meant. As strange as it is, we both had the same dream when we were sleeping in separate tents, but only 10 or 20 feet apart. I've heard other reports like this too. Others have, upon sleeping in the same location, had the same dream as someone else who'd slept in that location, even though they didn't know about it beforehand. I'm gonna reference again Otherworld. Episode 3 is a story about how two brothers had the same nightmare whenever they slept in a particular room in their house, only discovering this long after the fact. So there's a lot that we haven't talked about, like the potential evolutionary function of dreaming. Does it do something in particular for us? Immorality in dreams? Can we behave immorally if it's just a dream? The way dreams factor into epistemology? For example, how can I be sure that I'm not dreaming now? And the interpretation of dreams, in both a religious context and as a purely psychological endeavor. Freud, for example, was interested in dreams as a way of revealing hidden parts of our psyche. So do check out Jennifer Wint's SEP article on dreams for those subjects and more, as well as Ben Springett's IEP article on dreaming. And if you're interested in the weirder side of dreams, I would recommend Otherworld and Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which covers a few cases like the ones we discussed. All right, so with that, thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time.